Lesson 38. Text A. Can't she type? The well-known banker, T.J. Ellington, was at one time in his younger days the manager of a New York office. His secretary had been with him for many years and knew his ways and habits. She always kept a glass of water on his desk and knew that he disliked flowers in the office. He had a habit of interrupting a letter, when she was writing it down, with a few words on other subjects which had no connection with the letter, but she knew how to deal with that. She was never late, and was always willing to work beyond office hours when necessary. Therefore, when she left the office to get married, Ellington felt rather sorry for himself. In those days, good secretaries were hard to find. Ellington rang up the office in the city which had supplied him before, but the woman there said that she had no one suitable. He tried several other places, but the answer was always the same. There did not seem to be any secretaries unemployed, but it was absolutely necessary for him to find someone. And at last he rang up the first office again, and urged the woman to find a girl who could at least type. "Well," she said slowly, "there's Miss Steele." "Good," cried Ellington. "Send her along at once. I really must have someone here immediately." "I'm not sure about her," said the woman doubtfully.
"Why, can't she type? Is she too old?"
"Oh, she's quite young. In fact, she's only just left the secretarial college. She types very well indeed."
"Well then, what's the matter? Send her here at once."
"All right, if you say so. But she's a bit simple." Miss Steele arrived soon afterwards, and he explained her duties to her. At first she refused to accept the post. She said that she had had no experience and was not used to such work. But after a further conversation, he managed to persuade her to come, at least for a week or two. She agreed, but her face had a doubtful expression on it as she went out. On the following morning, Miss Steele arrived at the office ready for work. Ellington had one letter to which he wished to reply immediately, and he rang the bell. Miss Steele came in quietly and sat down, pencil in hand and notebook on knee. Ellington told her to take a letter, and was glad to see that she could write as fast as he spoke. It was soon done, and she went out to type it. "Well," thought Ellington, "there doesn't seem to be much wrong with that girl." A short time later, she entered the office again, and placed a letter, beautifully typed, on his desk. He looked at it with pleasure, but read it with surprise. It was as follows. 24th July, 1976. Mr. James Vandenberg. His address is on this letter. Here, take it with you. Dear Sir, I thank you for your letter of yesterday's date. I think the question of the electric motors needs further consideration, and as time is important, it will probably be best if we meet to discuss it. There's that cat outside the window again. Please tell Miss Harper to remove it and keep it away. I've told her before about it. I should take it as a favour if you would lunch with me on Friday next. What's happened to my glass of water this morning? We may then be able to settle the matter finally. I don't like flowers in the office. Please remove them. I usually lunch at 1 o'clock. Please let me know if that time will suit you. This letter is important. and I want you to type it carefully. Yours faithfully.
Text B. A quiz on general knowledge. Charles Kent and Tony Smith are playing a game. They are asking each other questions about general knowledge. When was America discovered, Tony? I'm not certain. Do you know? America was discovered by Christopher Columbus in 1492. In a way, that's right, but the Vikings travelled there long before Columbus. And what about the Red Indians? All right, ask me a question now. Who invented the electric light bulb? That's easy. It was invented by Edison. Correct. Now for a harder question. Who will be the first men on Mars? I can't answer that, but I think Mars will be visited by men before the end of this century. Ask me a question now. All right. What is the nearest planet to the Sun? That's easy. It's, Venus. No, Pluto. No, wait a minute. It's on the tip of my tongue. Oh dear, what is the nearest planet to the Sun?
7. Read the following passage once. Underline the key words while reading, and retell the story to your partner. Billy is 14 years old and in the 9th grade. He had a part-time job, which gets him up every morning at 5 o'clock. He is a newspaper boy. Each morning, Billy leaves the house at 5:15 to go to the corner where the newspapers are. The newspapers were delivered to the corner by truck at midnight. He always takes a wagon to carry them. In the winter, it is still dark when he gets up, but during the rest of the year, it is light. Billy must deliver the newspapers to the houses of people on his route in all kinds of weather. He tries to put each paper on the porch, where it will be protected from wind and rain or snow. His customers think he does a good job. Sometimes they give him tips. Billy earns about $70 per month, and he is saving some of the money to go to college. He spends the rest on records and clothes. Once a month, he has to collect money from his customers. Since many of them work during the day, Billy has to collect the money at night. Sometimes, when Billy is sick, his older brother has to deliver the newspapers. Once, Billy's father had to help. Billy has 70 customers now, but he hopes to get more soon. Someday, if he gets many more customers, Billy might win a prize for being an outstanding newspaper boy. He wants to win a trip to Europe, but he will be happy if he wins a new bicycle.
Lesson 39. Text A. My father's son. It's hard being an astronaut's son. I mean, everybody expects you to be special or perfect, and I'm just an average 11-year-old kid. I'm an average student, and I'm average, too, when it comes to basketball, football, soccer, and baseball. I often wonder how my father ever had a son like me. I mean, he's so special and so good at everything he does. In high school, he was captain of the football team, class president, and editor of the school newspaper. Well, to tell you the truth, I do have a little talent that nobody knows about. I write poems and stories and keep them in a red notebook in my bottom desk drawer. Nowadays, I dream about being a famous writer, but I used to dream about doing something spectacular to impress my father and make him proud of me. Something like rescuing a child from a burning building or chasing a robber away from an old lady. I was daydreaming in school one morning, which I do often. I was daydreaming about being some kind of hero, like discovering an instant cure for cancer or a shot for mental illness, when I heard my English teacher announce a Father's Day essay contest for the whole school. "I hope we have a winner right here in my English class," she said. "The PTA has donated 3 cash prizes, $100 for first prize, $50 for second, and $25 for third prize." After school, I walked home, thinking about the essay I would write. "My father is an astronaut," I would start out. No, I decided, I wouldn't do that. The whole country, and maybe even the whole world, saw my father as an astronaut, but that wasn't the way I saw him. When I got home, I kissed my mum quickly. Then I went upstairs to my room and sat down with a pen and a pad of paper. I started to think about what I would write. How did I see my father? I saw him sitting with me in the dark when I was a little kid and had a nightmare. I saw him teaching me how to use a bat and how to throw a baseball. I remembered how he hugged me for hours when my dog Spotty was hit and killed by a car. And I remembered how he surprised me with a new puppy at my 8th birthday party. When I started to cry, he told all the kids that I had a bad allergy. "David's allergy bothers him a lot this time of year," Dad said. And I remembered how he sat and tried to explain death to me when Grandpa Bob died. These were the things I was going to write about my dad. To me, he wasn't just a world-famous astronaut. He was my dad. I wrote about all these memories and put them in my essay. I handed it in the next day and was surprised to find out that the winning essays would be read in the auditorium on Thursday night. All the parents and students were invited. My parents and I went to school Thursday night. One of our neighbors said, "I bet you'll win the contest, David. I bet you wrote what it's like to be the son of an astronaut, and you're the only one in town who could write about that." My dad looked at me, and I shrugged. I hadn't shown him the essay, and now I almost hoped I wouldn't win. I didn't want to win just because my father was an astronaut. When third prize was announced, and it wasn't me, I was relieved and disappointed at the same time. Ellen Gordon won third prize, and she read her essay. Ellen is adopted, and she wrote about her better-than-real father. When she got to the end, I heard people in the audience sniffing and blowing their noses. My mother sniffed, and my father cleared his throat. The second prize winner was announced next. It was me. I went up to the stage, my knees shaking. I read my essay and wondered if my voice was shaking too. It was scary standing up in front of all those people. I called my essay "My Father's Son." I watched my parents as I read. When I finished reading, the audience applauded. I saw my father blowing his nose. Tears were running down my mother's face. I went back to my seat. I see you have an allergy, too, Dad, I tried to joke. Dad nodded, cleared his throat, and put his hand on my shoulder. Son, this is the proudest moment of my life, he said. It was the proudest moment of my life, too. Maybe I'll never be a great hero or win a Nobel Prize, but just then it was enough just to be my father's son.
Text B. The Wrong Sex or the Wrong Clothes. Sylvia and Larry both work for a big company in London. They work in different departments. They are having lunch in the canteen. We've got a new manager in our department.
Oh, you hoped to get that job, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
I'm sorry. That's too bad. Who is it? Who got the job, I mean?
Someone called Drexler. Carl Drexler. He's been with the company only 2 years. I've been here longer. And I know more about the job, too.
Why do you think they gave it to him and not to you?
Because I'm the wrong sex, of course.
You mean you didn't get the job because you're a woman?
Yes, that was probably it. It isn't fair.
What sort of clothes does he wear?
A dark suit, white shirt, a tie. Why?
Perhaps that had something to do with it.
You mean you think I didn't get the job because I come to work in jeans and a sweater?
It's possible, isn't it?
Do you really think I should wear different clothes?
Well, perhaps you should think about it.
Why should I wear a skirt or a dress?
I'm not saying you should. I'm saying you should think about it. That's all.
Why should I do that? I'm good at my job. That's the only important thing.
Perhaps it should be the only important thing, but it isn't. Not in this company. 7. Read the following passage once. Underline the key words while reading, and retell the story to your partner. The Clever Servant. A long time ago, there was a rich old man who loved wine and good food above everything else. And he had a servant who loved drinking and eating as much as his master did. Each time the rich old man went out, he had to hide his wine and food away. But each time the servant found them, and he helped himself to the bottles of wine and all the nice food. Of course, the rich old man knew who did it, and was displeased. But he could do nothing about it, because he had never caught his servant drinking his wine or eating his food. One day, the old man was invited to dinner at the home of one of his friends. He did not know what to do with the wine, meat, and chicken he had just bought. Certainly, he could not leave them to the servant. Then he had an idea. He called up the servant and said to him, "I'll be away for the whole evening, and I'll leave you to look after the house. In the cupboard, there are 2 bottles filled with poison. Be careful about it. You'll be killed if you take even a drop of it. There is also some meat and chicken in the cupboard. Take care of them." With these words, the rich old man left home. As soon as the master turned his back, the servant opened the cupboard and began to enjoy all the nice things in it. He emptied the 2 bottles and ate up the meat, the chicken, and everything else he found in the cupboard. He was satisfied and soon fell asleep. At midnight, the rich old man returned home. He looked into the cupboard, and, to his great surprise, All his wine and food were gone. He was mad with anger and called the servant up. "O master," the servant began before the old man could open his mouth, "while you were away, the neighbor's black cat stole into our kitchen and ate up everything in the cupboard. I knew you would be very angry with me. I was so afraid that I drank the 2 bottles of poison to kill myself." There were even tears in the servant's eyes. "O master," he continued, "please don't get angry with a dying man. I'll soon be dead." The rich old man, of course, did not believe a word of his story, but again he could do nothing about it. Lesson 40. Text A. Learn to eat like a grown-up.
The table's laid. Come along, both of you, and let us begin.
I'm ready. I feel quite hungry. So am I. I could eat a horse.
Well, we haven't got a horse for you, but what we have got is quite nice. Sit there and see how well you can behave. Remember, you're getting quite a big boy, and must learn to eat like a grown-up.
Does that mean that I can eat more?
We want you to make a good meal, though we don't want you to stuff yourself. Your place has been laid just like ours.
What's this little plate for?
That's for your bread. Most people eat a little bread with their meat and vegetables.
Mother, aren't you going to cut my meat up for me any more?
No, I'm not. We have put a knife and fork for you, and you must learn how to use them. Here is your meat. Help yourself to vegetables from the dish. Don't take more than you can eat.
All right, Mother. May I take some mustard? You may, but I don't think you'll like it. You'll find it hot. Now sit up properly. Don't lean back, and don't lean too far forward.
And take your elbows off the tablecloth.
And don't take too much on your fork. You shouldn't open your mouth wide at meals.
Don't make a noise when you are eating.
Good gracious! I think it would be better if I took my plate away to the nursery. I shan't be able to eat at all if I try to remember all those things. Stay where you are. You'll soon learn.
What are you doing? Don't you know that you must never put your knife into your mouth?
But why, Mummy? It's easier like that sometimes. You might cut your mouth. Do you want to make your mouth bigger than it is? Use your fork. No, I don't. But I might prick my tongue with the points of my fork. Well, you must learn not to.
There, leave the lad alone. He'll soon learn. Have you finished, dear? Lay your knife and fork on your plate. No, don't cross them. Put the handles towards you.
Now, here come the sweets. Here's your plate. Use that spoon and fork. Use your fork more than your spoon. But why? Isn't it polite to use the spoon?
Of course it is. But most people use the fork more than the spoon. Use the spoon when you have to.
You mean for eating very soft stuff?
That's right. Why? You haven't drunk any water.
Not there, on your right. But why? Because it is nearer to your right hand. It's handier there. All right, Dad. There seems to be a great deal to learn. Give me some more pudding, Mother.
Give me doesn't get. Say, please may I have.
Please may I have some more pudding?
Here you are. What's that I see? Dirty hands? See that you don't come to table with dirty hands again.
And brush your hair next time you come. I'll try to remember, but you mustn't expect me to learn everything at once. May I get down now?
Very well. Run along. Text B. A Red Cross Nurse. Mary wanted to be a nurse when she left school, but in the meantime, she joined the Red Cross and had some limited training. She was taught that, in case of an accident, and they were plentiful in her town, she should give first aid at once and then send for a doctor. One day, there was an accident in a busy street, and when Mary arrived soon after, she saw a man bending over a woman who had been accidentally knocked down by a car and was lying motionless in the street. Mary ran up, pushed the man away, informed the crowd that she was a Red Cross nurse, and began to help the wounded woman. After a few minutes, the man who had been bending over the woman when Mary arrived touched her on the shoulder and said, "When you reach the part about sending for a doctor, don't worry. I'm here already." 7. Read the following passage once. Underline the key words while reading, and retell the passage to your partner. We say that a person has good manners if he or she behaves politely and is kind and helpful to others. Everyone likes a person with good manners, but no one likes a person with bad manners. Yes, you may say, but what are good manners? How does one know what to do and what not to do? Well, here are some examples of the things that a well-mannered person does or does not do. He never laughs at people when they are in trouble. Instead, he tries to help them. He is always kind, never cruel to people. When people are waiting for a bus, or in a post office, he takes his turn. He does not push to the front line of the queue. In the bus, he gives his seat to an older person or a lady who is standing. If he accidentally bumps into someone or gets in their way, he says, "Excuse me," or "I'm sorry." He says "please" when he makes a request, and "thank you" when he receives something. He stands up when he is speaking to a lady or an older person. He does not sit down until the other person is seated. He does not interrupt other people when they are talking. He does not talk too much himself. He does not talk loudly or laugh loudly in public. When he is eating, he does not speak with his mouth full of food. He uses a handkerchief when he sneezes or coughs.
听力课堂，欢迎你。
听力课堂，欢迎你。
听啊，讲啊。